deny the absolute pleasure of listening to the music of Nazim Rashid. Morning. We always appreciate all listeners that tune in on the Saturday morning student radio show on the internet, and we just really appreciate the fact that the internet allows us to archive our shows, in other words, record our shows, so that if you miss a show or you want to go back and listen to something that we've already done, they're there. They're here. They're in our, we have a history of all the shows that we've done. Some of them have been deleted because, you know, just got technical problems, but most of the shows are there. And so if you have someone that might benefit from listening to one of the shows that are that may be about getting a job or starting a business after incarceration, or how to deal with students with learning disabilities, any of those things, please feel free to look through our archive and pick something out that and you know, put on a cup of coffee and invite a nephew or a son over to listen to the broadcast. So this is Professor Applewise this morning on the Student to Teacher to Student radio show that you can call in at 616-427-3758. I'm happy to report that we have now over 4,000 people who have, in one way or another, listened to our show or looked at our profile. We are proud of that, especially being that we are not doing we're doing very minimal promotion to keep our show going. We have someone on the air right now. Good morning. This is Professor Applewhite.
Professor Apple.
Oh, is this our co-host, Dorothy Nichols-Rashid?
Yes. How are you?
Whoa. We have two beautiful co-hosts. We have a resource consultant, which you're listening to right now, Dorothy Nichols-Rashid. She takes care of all of resources and acknowledges sponsors. If you'd like to sponsor something that you're doing, a service that you'd like to provide. We have people that are selling their books, and when they sell their books to any of our students, they return a percentage as a donation to keep our operations going. We have totally volunteer staff. So, we really appreciate any donations that come in on memberships. And Dorothy, you'll tell them more about that towards the end of the show. I know you will. So, welcome. Good morning. It's a great morning out there, isn't it? And you're in Arizona?
Yes, wonderful.
That's right. It's wonderful in Arizona. We're not saying that wherever you are is not wonderful, but we really like Arizona, and we've chosen this to be our headquarters for White Apple Institute. However, we intend to visit and do conferences, as we've done conferences in different places from on the North American continent. We certainly are excited about going beyond Mexico, Canada, and the United States, and going to other countries and teaching more of these principles about how to acknowledge your abilities versus focusing so much time on your disabilities. You know, we know that we have to acknowledge disability or disadvantages in our lives because they're there. But what we try to do, as you'll hear from our co-host, Nazim Rashid, in just a moment, is we try to move you into a virtual space, a space where you can create your own world and get rid of the denials and really build a successful life. And I believe he is now ready to come online. Let's see if this is him. Good morning.
Good morning, Nazim Rashid here. Good morning, Nazim here.
Nazim Rashid, just who I was talking about. Also, Nazim Rashid is a personal development consultant. I don't know if I announced that enough. Not only he's an author of a new book called Reconnecting, and a musician, and I'm just very, very happy to have him with us, and he's always very, very appreciative of being with me and putting this show together to the best of our ability with very, very busy schedules. So thank you. I also, in acknowledging Nazim's book, need to acknowledge that I am still continuing to write Rehabilitation of the Illness Mentality, teaching people how to overcome the mentality of illness, because sometimes having the mentality of illness feeds into more illness and more illness, and it's like a snowball effect. It never stops. And so, you know, I hope that that will be something that our listeners will call in. Also, you know, if you want Nazim's book or any of the books that we mentioned on the show, just email us. You can do that by going to our website and hitting the Contact Us button, and it allows you to email us a message right into our info, and we will return your call. Our chat line is open, Nazim. So, yeah. We encourage our listeners to go into the chat, right?
Yes.
Yeah, go into the chat, and I promise you Nazim will talk to you there, and we'll get your information. We do need to encourage people to at least give us an email when they connect with us on chat so that we can get back to them. We have a young man, someone who has called in the past week, I believe, Nazim, and if he's listening out there, I want to let him know we're getting your information, but we're not able to get your phone number, and we don't want you to think that we are ignoring you. You mentioned something about needing some help with knowing how to apply for a job with whatever your disadvantage or disability is that you need to, you're working on overcoming. So would you please call back again? I'm sorry that we just can't hear your number, okay? All right, so what's our show about today? This is part two, isn't it, Dorothy?
Yes.
This is part two, okay? Okay, and listening to burned out teachers and students. That's a tough one, because we don't usually listen to ourselves. We don't listen to the people in our homes and our family members and spouses and friends, and you know, or we listen with the intent of when are they going to stop talking so I can say what I want to say or tell them what to do. And today we're going to focus a lot on listening strategies that Nazim Rashid has put together for us. So make sure you've got a pad and paper, especially you teachers out there and students, which all of us are. If this is an interesting subject to you, make sure you write down some of these strategies that he's going to share with you later on the show, okay? We have another caller, Dorothy, before we start reading what the show content is about this morning. Okay, good morning. This is Professor Applewhite. Uh-oh, we seem to have lost that call. Please call back again, listener. That number again is 1-646-727-3758. And sometimes in the middle of the show, Dorothy will give that call number again and also how to connect with us through White Apple Institute. But right now, we'll have her beautiful voice tell us a little bit about the description of the show today.
Okay, it's listening to burnt out teachers and students part two. A continuation of the discussion started last week concerning listening more effectively to teachers and students. Professor Applewhite and guests will listen and share interesting ideas about how to stay motivated with adult students in crisis situations. Nazim Rashid, co-host, will share more effective listening strategies for improving and minimizing frustrations when teachers, even those in churches, mosques, synagogues, or academic environments, feel overwhelmed.
That's right. Absolutely. And I thought that was real interesting that we would add in that we're talking about, you know, teachers in, at all levels, Nazim. Someone said to me, you know, does that apply to Sunday school teachers? And I'm like, you know, we're all teachers and students. It's not just about the academic teacher. You know, of course, we focus a lot on that because that's where we have the highest rate of issues that we need to address. But all of us are teachers and students, and we want our listeners to know that and to feel comfortable that if you're teaching in a synagogue or a mosque, or wherever, that you can call in and participate in our show. Because whenever you are teaching, you are responsible, okay? And whenever you are a student, you are responsible. What are you responsible for? For learning and sharing and growing, okay, right? Did I say that right, Nazim?
Yes, that's true, yes, also. And also keep in mind that whenever anybody is teaching, they're always going to be in one of the positions of being a communicator or a listener. And so that's very important to understand the rules and the roles of those positions. That's important.
That's right. Absolutely. And we have another caller that's coming online now. Okay. And if you can. Okay, there's that caller we lost just a moment ago, Nazim. Let's try to get them online. Good morning. This is Professor Applewhite. Time. Take your time and say your name. Okay, we'll come back to you in just a moment. Okay, switchboard's really lighting up here. Hello, this is Professor Applewhite on the Student to Teacher to Student Show. Good morning.
Good morning, it's Maria.
Maria, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
966 show. Oh, I'm doing great. And it sounds like you're doing great, too. Who's on our 966 number?
Cindy.
Cindy. How are you, Cindy? Okay. Good to hear from you. Cindy, I'm so glad you joined us this morning. Cindy's our new office manager who's doing a wonderful job getting White Apple Institute organized. So we certainly applaud you. And thank you so much for joining us. This morning, certainly we don't make the radio show a mandatory thing for our staff, but we're always happy when they call in because we all need to share this information. So thank you, Cindy, for joining us this morning, and please feel free to jump in and share your thoughts on anything that you hear this morning. Got one more caller here we want to acknowledge that's been waiting for a while. Good morning, this is Professor Applewhite. Good morning. Just say your name. We'd love to hear your name. You're calling from 584 prefix. Okay. We'll give you some time there. We'll come back to you. Sometimes people would like to just, you know, come on air and just listen. And when they feel comfortable, then they jump in and say something. And so that's fine, too. And for those of you who do not want to, you know, go on air, feel a little apprehensive about that, again, our chat line is open, so you can go into chat, and we will respond to you in the chat room. Okay? All right, well, let me just tell you a little bit about where I'm coming from. As a professor of psychology and education, I look at listening as a very, very important part of teaching. But more than that, I listening is a very important part of just being human. You know, boy, as you probably know, I have a lot to say, okay? Okay, right, Nazim? Okay. Hear everybody laughing on that one. Okay, Apple.
Got that right.
You know, sometimes my people that work with me that say, hold on, you didn't get what I said there. And so as long as I've been teaching, which is over 30 years without aging myself too much, I still have to go back and review listening strategies. so that I become more effective, not only for myself, but for the people that I work with, the people that I'm trying to help. And it's important because what am I doing this for but to do, for me, God's work. And so this is very important to me to hear these strategies over again, which Nazim will be sharing with us. It's also important for teachers to know, many teachers, as Nazim and I have experienced through the years, have a tremendous ego. And many of us get into the field because of our ego. It gives us an opportunity to stand in front of an audience of students and tell them what to do and to be kind of like almost in a dictatorship position.
Got that right.
Right, okay. And Nazim, how about the teachers, and we talked about this once before, that have looked at me like I'm absolutely out of my mind when I have said, I learn from my students. And you said it too. I mean, we learn from our students, and they look at us like, wait a minute, no, we're here to teach them. No, we're here to learn from each other because the roles interchange. Right, my brother? The roles interchange.
All the time.
And what about our first show, which we definitely need to repeat again, which is when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Okay, that goes for all of us. I don't care how many academic degrees you have. I don't care how long you've been in school. When you are ready to listen to something and to learn something, the teacher within you appears and allows you to derive information from your environment. And speaking of environment, that means when you are in crisis situations, when you are in situations where frustration is overwhelming, where the environment is not cool. We talked a lot about that last week. But just to remind you again that these listening strategies are not when everything is going great. Okay? It's always good. And I always hear a lot of the religious leaders talk about you know, how great life is when things are going great. Okay? But when you hit that wall and you're dealing with problems, okay, that I like to call, Nazim and I like to call lessons, okay, but when we're dealing with those barriers that stop us, when you can overcome that and still listen to your heart, whatever you call that voice within, the kingdom of God within, whatever you want to call it, there's a voice inside that teaches us and quiets us. So for a moment, I would like to stop, and before we run out of time, because we've got 41 minutes left, and we ran out of time last time for Dorothy's resource, and I want to give Nazim enough time to at least take about 10 minutes or so to go through these listening strategies, and I please encourage our listeners to jump in with questions, please. Just say, excuse me, I have a question, or whatever, and he is quite open to that and will stop what he's doing and answer your question, okay? Nazim, go ahead and share those listening strategies. I'm writing them down myself.
Oh, okay. Let me just get back to my little notes here, all right? I believe last week we talked about the various items we have to keep in mind when we're in a listening mode, and the one of as a recap, one of the most important things to keep in mind is to have our center on the person that we're dealing with and not on ourselves. So therefore, we're not listening to our own voice with suggestions, recommendations, and directions and so forth, and remedies, quote-unquote, for the other person. It's not about how we feel at that moment. It's not about how we think. It's not about where we think the person should be or what they should be saying. It's not about any kind of judgmental kind of a disposition whatsoever. It's all about what the other person is saying, how they're feeling, and how we can help them from their vantage point, from their perspective. Because it's very important when the answer is discovered or the answer is actually comes to the surface of the interaction between you and another person, if that person sees it for themselves, then it's real. And it can only be real if they perceive it as being okay and being an answer for them. So even if you know without a shadow of a doubt what the answer is for them, it has to come out of their mouth and not yours. They have to reaffirm it for themselves. So it's important to really get their perspective. Their perspective, that's important. So we have to
do that. Let me ask you to clarify something for some of our listeners out here who might not be, due to language, culture, whatever, that might not be aware of what censor really means. We're not talking about censoring what you say. What you're really discussing is the pointers, the focus. Is that right? To put our sensors out there so that we receive information. You want to clarify that a little bit more so that some of us that are out there that might not understand what you meant when you said we've got to have our sensors out there?
Well, no, I didn't really say sensors. What I was basically saying is that we have to see their situation from their perspective, not our perspective. That'd be their perspective. So, and of course, now if we, you know, if we're, you know, a little skilled, we can actually frame our language to guide them a certain kind of way. We got to be very careful that it's only with their allowance. It's only with their actual permission, you know, to do that. So it's very, very important to understand that you've got to be very, very sensitive to where they are with their situation. And that's very important.
And their culture. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, and especially for those teachers out there who are dealing, you know, as our classrooms begin to look like more of the United Nations every day now, we have to understand that we, especially here in America, we have an American culture. Okay, across the board, where we talk a lot about, you know, capitalism and freedom and liberty, but sometimes when we're talking to people who have come from other places, their culture becomes a conflict with what the teacher is saying, and so I think that's real important. Said just now about, you know, being open to their perspective, to the listener's perspective, to your audience,
right?
You know,
right. This is very important because I saw some cultures do not allow you to make direct eye contact.
Oh, yes.
You know?
Right.
And so in looking at the principles of listening communication skills, eye contact is very important. So if you look at the textbook perspective and you don't regard the particular culture that you're dealing with, you can offend and cut off the communication between you and that person.
That's right. Right.
You know,
exactly.
So you got to understand that. So that's important. This is why the idea of cultural diversity is very, very important in our school systems and other school systems.
However, Nazim, we've got teachers out there listening right now, and I don't know if you heard earlier. I quoted a number. I'm telling you, brother, it's unbelievable. We've got over 4,000 people who are listening in and looking at profile of the show and really getting involved with what we're doing, which is just, I mean, it's blowing me away. And I know it's doing the same for you, because we haven't done any promotion out there. Talk about word of mouth. But getting to my question here is that, yes, cultural diversity is important, but I hear teachers, I teach teachers, and so, you know, the first thing they say when I say something like that is, well, my God, do I have to learn all the cultures and all the languages of every student that comes to me? Why has that become my responsibility now? And I understand what you're trying to say, but there is a general universal language that we can use, which, of course, I call love, where we can try our best, as you were saying a moment ago, to reach out and try to understand.
Well, see, it's important. Now, hold tight. Now, I would tell the teacher, yes, you do have to learn them. If you have an Asian, you have a Filipino, you have someone from Botswana in your class, you have three different cultures that you're not familiar with? I say, yes, you got to learn those three cultures. You got to understand
yeah.
what's okay and not okay in those cultures, because that's what you have in your classroom. I would say, yes, you have to learn them, the ones that are appropriate for you in your class.
Certainly if you're having challenges with those students. You know, if the students are getting along just fine and they seem to be adjusting well, okay, I still think that you're right. I still think we should just to make the environment even more comfortable for them, I still think you're right. I think we need to make an effort at least to learn a little bit about their culture, like you said, about some cultures not even wanting to, you know, look you in the eye or don't want you to touch them on their head or take pictures, you know, different things like that. I think that's important. And so what we're saying, teachers out there and students, is that we're not saying you have to learn every single thing about a culture or learn the language or 10 different students in your classroom. What we're saying is just to gain a little bit of knowledge about their culture. And it wouldn't hurt to know a few comfortable words like hello. I don't know about you, Nazim, but whenever I've done that with students from different cultures, just to say, learn how to say hello in their language, they have smiled from ear to ear just to know that I took the time to even do that.
Oh, sure, sure. But it's important to understand that they have to learn the interpersonal skills of those cultures. You know, that's the part you have to understand, because how are you going to communicate? How are you going to bond and connect with that student if you don't understand the interpersonal skills of that particular culture? You have to know
right.
those things. Some don't allow you to come too close. Some too far is not good. You see?
Right.
So you have to know. You have to know what your boundaries are, what's okay and not okay in that particular culture. That's important
mm-hmm.
for you to communicate and listen to that particular student.
Right. Okay, so we've got culture as, you know, and culture and just building a comfort zone for a strategy.
Mm-hmm.
We're not on horse?
No. Are you there?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay, so now going back to, now, first of all, understanding that you have the interpersonal skills down so you know who you're dealing with. Right, then you can move on to what you have to do. Okay, so when you're in a listener role, you are not to speak and interrupt. You cannot wait for the other person to breathe so you can get your point in and maybe steal the conversation. And that's what happens most of the time when people are talking. I'm telling you, most of the time you have conversation hijacking going on.
I like that. I love it. I love it. I love it. And I know what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah, you have a concern. Say, for instance, a student comes to you and they say, "Well, like Professor Apple, you know, my mom, you know, I had a headache this morning, and she couldn't get my breakfast made in time, so I tried my best, but I spilled the oatmeal and burned my hand, and I was running late to catch the bus, so I just put some kind of Vaseline on there and went to the, you know, bus, but I got a bus, my hand was stinging, you know, for all that, and then I left my math book at home and all that, and came to class, and my teacher got my case because I didn't have my math book, and I kept holding my hand, and because it was hurting, and the teacher thought I was being disrespectful in the classroom, and so forth, and then you say, is that right? Wow, you know, last night I had something happen to me. You know, I stuck my toe on the coffee table, and that hurt like the dickens all night long. And I don't know what to do myself this morning. My husband got on my case and so forth. But I was upset. I don't know what happened. So what happened? Now the kid is saying, "Wait a minute, that was my story."
Right.
And now he's talking about them stubbing their toe last night, and now it's their story. You see?
You know.
So,
I hope you don't mind. This conversation hijacking is extremely important because I find it, as I listed in my book, that people will actually tell you their illness, their disability, just so, or they'll ask you yours, I'm sorry, they'll ask you yours just for the express purpose of being able to tell you, and how they'll ask you, and yours is maybe 5 minutes. And then because they listen to yours, now they want to take an hour to tell you about every single thing that's going on with them. They're very, very similar to the situation that you just talked about with student and teacher. It happens with people who are just talking about their so-called disabilities and not talking about their abilities, about instead of saying how are you and getting information so you can tell somebody about how many things you've gone through, how about saying things like how we can encourage each other to overcome those things. And so I really like that term, conversation hijacking. So as I hijack that conversation, we can move on.
it's important as a listener, it's important to know how to empathize. Now, at the same time, though, however, as a teacher, if you're in a teacher role or a counselor role, then we have to monitor and guide the conversations also, so that we aren't, starting talking about downtown First Street in Washington, then why don't talk about the moon in five minutes and so forth. So we have to kind of, be in charge of that also. And so that's why we have to kind of guide and make sure the person is staying on the topic, And if the person is talking about their burnt finger, we have to constantly bring them back to the burnt finger instead of now the neighbor's dog that got stolen, So if it's a burnt finger, we got to stay on the burnt finger. Well, how does that feel to you? Tell me more about that. I want to know more about that. What happened? And what did you do behind that? I want to know more about that. And stay, keep right there and asking how they feel about that. What's going on with that? And you want to know more from their perspective about that burnt finger. That's it. That's all we're talking about. You see? And that's it. So therefore, we have to understand how to get out of ourselves and get into the person's perspective. And I'm telling you, we have different realities out here. Different realities, people don't understand this. Some people don't understand that part. But we have different realities here. And so mine could be different from theirs. And so, therefore, we have to know what is real for them. What are they seeing? What is going on in their brain? We need to know that. And then when we understand that, then we can help them. We can help them. And you can't be empathic unless you can do that. You can't cry with the person unless you can really know exactly where their pain is coming from and how they're actually seeing the situation. You see, that's important to understand.
It goes back to the old saying, and I don't want to name a tribe or whatever, but I know that it's pretty much Native American. Walk a mile in my moccasins, walk a mile in my shoes to really understand what I'm saying. And I wanted to clarify one more thing for our listeners about focus, what you talked about focus, very important. Focused listening and focused learning. I wanted teachers to understand that we have to be aware of a couple of things. When you find a student that cannot focus correctly or consistently, then you do need to look at the possibility that we need to do some testing, okay? So, I'm going to say that to you out there because I know that we're dealing with an overload of this ADHD and ADD and autistic issue in the classroom. And so I want, what I'm seeing is a continuing bombardment of just because a student is not focusing on a subject does not mean immediately that we refer them for, an IEP meeting, which is the educational program meeting, planning meeting, to say that they need some additional support. Let's give it a little time, like Nazim was saying a moment ago, and use our ability to monitor and guide their conversations, okay? Let's take a little bit more time on that, and we may find that there is no ADD. There's just a burning sensation inside of them, a yearning for someone to listen to them. Right, Nazim?
That's right.
Just listen, please, for a moment to what I have to say, teacher, because Mom doesn't listen because she's working, and Dad, I hardly ever see him, and there's nobody else around me, and I've got so much I want to tell you. And so, you know, many times we find our students acting out, even adult students, unfortunately, acting out because they can't have that time. They don't have that time to just share in a guided conversation. We are counselors. Teachers are counselors. So I really appreciate what you said. Anybody else out there, just for a moment, as we take a quick break, and Nazim, just hold on just a moment here. We've got,
okay.
I lost someone on the switchboard here, so I'm very sorry. Call back in, please, on the switchboard. Dorothy, would you give us the call numbers again for those of us that need to have those call numbers and how to connect with us on the web?
Oh, okay.
Dorothy?
Yeah, she took a small break. 1-646-727-3758. 1-646-727-3758. That's the law sub number to call in for the radio program.
Right, exactly. And for our website, I don't know if you have that in front of you right now.
Your website, 480-659-8582. Again, 480-659-8582.
And that is the office number for White Apple Institute for our listeners out there. And that's where anything that you hear said on the show, because you're not able to get us back on the show, actually, after we end the show, you'll have to call us at our office or contact us on the web at whiteappleinstitute.org, O-R-G, not .com, .org. And, but if you put in White Apple Institute, pretty much it'll take you to our site. And pretty soon, we're still working on our site right now, but you'll be able to visualize how handsome and beautiful all of us are with looking at our bios. And I say that from a very inner beauty and an inner peace that we all share at White Apple Institute that we'd like to share with you as our students and teachers out there. So, Nazim, we're finishing up with focus here.
Okay. All right. Okay. Now I want to continue with asking the right kind of questions, because if you want certain answers, you have to ask the right kind of questions. So the first question you want to ask them is, how do they see their situation? How do they feel about their situation? How do they view the world? How do they view themselves? How do they view others? So you want to have a clear idea of what they are perceiving as being real in their lives. And so many times children have not been asked those questions. Young adults have not been asked those questions. Our students have not been asked those questions. Why? Because the parents, too many times, unfortunately, don't feel that the children's perspective is that important.
Well, yeah, you hear the thing all the time. Children should be seen and not heard. That always aggravated me, even as a child. I was, nerd child anyway. Looking at, how can somebody say that? I mean, it's another human being. You know, why isn't their world, their questions important? But no, they really believe that children should only be seen and not heard. How many of you, any of our listeners out there, ever heard that perspective? I mean, please share with us. Anyone out there, have you ever heard someone say something or imply something like that? Let me give you a minute to just respond back to Nazim on that. We'd love to hear from you. Got plenty
Dr.
of people
Applewhite?
On the Yes, yes.
Dr. Applewhite?
Yes, please.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi, this is Martha Bergen. Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Bergen. So always happy.
Good morning. I've been listening, and I thought I was in the queue, but for some reason, I don't know. I just love this conversation. You're exploring so many really important aspects of listening, the whole concept of empathy, of understanding where the person that you're listening to is coming from, what's real for them, what is their world like. I thought that was an amazing approach that really helps people understand listening. It's not just simply standing there and letting some words wash over you. To answer the question you were talking about just now, that was the home that I was raised in. It was children should be seen and not heard. And, you know, they lived by that. It was like if you spoke up, you were not only considered not, a welcome voice, you could be punished for that.
That's right.
And I was kind of wondering if there were other people who were kind of raised in that cultural environment.
Yeah.
That's right.
I'm sure there are. Even in today's world, even with all of the things that we have on television that encourage children to talk out, I'm sure that there are some in the home, and that's why they're so eager when they come to the classroom sometimes to just share. And you find that even though you teach at a college level, and by the way, for our guests out there, Dr. Martha Bergen is a board member on White Apple Institute, and she also, as I said and I will continue to say, one of the leading experts in communications and teaches sociology. So please take advantage of this opportunity to talk to her and Nazim on our very special show today. Is there anybody else out there that can answer Dr. Bergen and Nazim about whether or not they grew up in a home like that? Don't be bashful. I'll give you a few minutes here to get your thoughts together. Or you've heard about someone that has been punished or disciplined because they just asked us a question. Even about sexuality, that's a big question that's, always squashed down, but a very important part of learning.
Well, suggestions to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. I heard somebody.
When children bring up the things that are in their heart, often they're just these innocent, beautiful questions that bring up all of the things that the parents are struggling with so much, and they can't deal with it, and they don't want to deal with it. And that's really, I think, why they have that rule that, we're only going to talk about what I can handle talking about today.
Oh, that goes with the smoking and the drinking stuff, too.
Absolutely.
I know that's becoming a really big hang-up. I'm getting a lot of people telling me that their grandchildren or their children are, because they're learning so much about smoking and alcohol and drugs in school, that they're coming home and sharing this information, and it's making them feel very uncomfortable. Because it's like, shut up, I don't want to hear this. I want you to go away with those brochures and stuff. I don't want to talk to you about this. This is my life. But children want to hear that, and they want you to listen to them. And students at all ages, adults, we as adults, want to be able to talk to each other about these things. And sometimes teachers out there, we're the only ones that our students can come to and talk to. So we really have to start listening so that we don't have this burnout and dropout situation continually happening.
Okay, I have a question, Ms. Apple.
Go ahead.
Okay, so
Maria.
I have a question. So why do you think that the parents would tell the children to be quiet? I don't want to hear about that. So why do you think the parents tell them to be quiet? Why?
I'll ask Dr. Bergen to answer, and then if I can add anything to that or Nazim to answer your question. That's a very important. Why do that? And of course, to look at different cultures, too, because it exists in different cultures even more strict than we were talking about earlier, as Nazim brought out. Dr. Bergen, you have anything? Yeah. How do you answer Maria on that?
Well, I think you're so right that there's both a cultural explanation and then there's the psychological explanation. Like my cultural roots are in Scotland, in England, and in Scottish culture, it's often said as a joke that you don't get to be a grown-up until you have one foot in the grave. If there's anybody older than you in the family, they always have their say, and that gives them, you know, a certain position. And, you know, they need that position in the culture. So you've got things like the father, the patriarchy, the father being the head of the house, or the matriarchy, the mother's the head. You have these hierarchical positions that they need to, you know, that it's sort of unconscious. They're just always kind of guarding that. And then on the other side, there's the psychological things that we've been talking about, which that's what came to my heart right away when Maria asked her question was, I think that there's just some things that people don't know how to deal with. They would love to be able to have a happier life, a life that's healthier, but maybe they just don't know how to talk about that, and maybe they're afraid that things will come up that they just can't deal with.
Right. Maria, I hope that answers your question in one way, and I'm going to add a little bit more to that and say that it's true, many times the parents don't know how to answer you. And so they stay away from it. And they also, they just really, truly do not know the answers. And they want, when they don't know the answers, they become like the big master of the house. Like, you don't ask questions about things like that because I'm the only one who should know this, you know. And when I feel it's time for you to know it, then you'll know it. And Maria has an interesting, being part of the Student Advisory Board for White Apple Institute, Maria has some interesting things that she'll be sharing with students about the fact that, you know, how you can, past a certain age, grow up with different things that are going on with you physically and emotionally, such as cerebral palsy or whatever, and where your parents, of course, they don't know how to answer that. And especially if they're extremely religious, many people have said it's a curse, okay, and left it there, okay. So the child grows up thinking, well, the reason why I'm like this is because I'm cursed, and I'm a burden to the family. And so that's one of the things that we at White Apple Institute really try to work hard on, is moving people from that position, Maria and other listeners out there. So because they don't answer you, because they continually suppress you answering the question, is usually because of what Dr. Bergen was saying earlier, and because they are uncomfortable with, they just don't know. They don't know how to answer. So it's easier just to say it's a curse or it's God's will or whatever and leave it there. And then you grow up, or the person grows up, never understanding that they have a possibility to learn and to grow. Right, Nazim?
Yes, and also besides that, also it's also cultural conditioning. You know,
yes.
It really is. It's cultural conditioning. And when you look at empathy skills and really learning from the perspective of the other person, that automatically means that the person has value that should be recognized in themselves, and that goes counter to a lot of cultural conditioning.
Yes.
It really does, and so forth. So idea of kids being validated and them being important as a human being, as having God's spirit inside of them and need to be recognized and respected, that goes counter to a lot of cultural conditioning. It really does. It really does, and so forth. So when you ask a parent or a teacher to have these skills, oh, they said, what are you talking about? My mom didn't do it. My father didn't do this kind of thing. We don't do those kind of things here. No. We don't do this kind of thing. We don't do those kind of things. And what happens? Who loses? The kid loses. and they think that they aren't valid. They think they are worthless, and they kind of wish they're on the abortion calendar instead. You know, but look at that point. That's what's happening.
Gosh, I can't ask my parents, and now I can't even ask my teacher. And as I grow up to be the adult, now I want to go to college, I can't even ask my college professor. I mean, where do I get the answer to these questions? Just like Maria was saying, where do you get the answer? And I hope that we're answering some of them for you here at White Apple Institute. And we've got a lot more information that we can share with you on a one-on-one basis, of course, with these questions. But I hope that you gain something from what you've heard, and also that you understand that culture is not race or ethnicity. Culture is the way people believe and what they value in their families, okay? So it's just an attitude that they develop from belief systems that have been there for generations since the beginning of time. And so when children are born with different so-called dis-ease or disadvantages, or you have a child that has a lot of questions, okay? Because sometimes that can be a bothersome thing to many parents. You know, oh, kids, shut up. I've heard parents say that. Have you? Have you guys heard parents say that?
All the time,
yeah.
All the time. Jeez.
Kids just won't stop talking, you know what I mean? You know, and instead of, that's an award. That should be something that should be applauded, that child wants to learn. But because the parent is feeling insecure, you know, back to that lack of being able to guide a conversation. They don't know how to even do that, Nazim.
No.
They don't know how to monitor and guide a conversation, but we can teach you how.
Yeah, they don't want to do that.
Teach you how, yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. And Maria, any other questions?
Okay, I guess that leads me to understand that, you know, none of us has, as a parent or a friend or whatever, we don't really have answers for everything in life. And when it comes to let a little young person, when they ask a question that is not proper for them to know right away because they're too young, that means that the parents, all of us should be more educated in a lot of things to be able to tell the little children a good answer, even though it would not be the proper answer right there because they're too young to know, that they will be able to have answers to kind of say, okay, maybe it's not the time for you to know this right now. They should have some kind of answer, not just to tell them to shut up and just maybe say, okay, this is not the time for you to know this right now. This is you too young for you to know this thing.
What a good point. Oh, my God. Was that an excellent
point? I don't know.
That was an excellent point.
It's important to tell a kid sometimes, you know, I don't know the answer. But tell you what, let's together, let's find out. I'll research it. But, you know, I don't know everything, but I will do all my best to find it out for you. And we can learn together.
Right.
And we have to talk about the whole thing. We don't have to say, I mean, especially when it's a complicated subject, we don't have to talk about the thing like you said, Maria. We can just talk about a little bit, but it's a way of at least letting the child know, the student know, that I'm not shutting you down. I'm just saying, let's learn this part first. This is part two, phase one, and now we go to phase two. Okay? We take it in baby steps. And if we could just get parents and teachers, because parents are teachers too. This show is really great. I hear a lot from parents, okay? You know, this show is for parents. You're teachers out there, okay? So we thank you so much, Maria. Keep those questions coming. Any of our other listeners, if you have more to say, I don't think we're going to – I don't know if we're going to carry this to part three. Next week I'll have to, work with the co-host on that. And see if we're going to do a part three on this because it does seem to be a very interesting question. The switchboard is very well lit up, so people are listening to what is going on, what we're talking about. But we have about 4 minutes remaining on the show, and Nazim, we'll have to come back to you if you have some kind of summary of what you'd like to say. Dr. Berger, do you have a summary right now of anything that you'd like to say before Dorothy acknowledges our sponsors?
Just briefly, what Maria was talking about, I'd like to summarize. She actually stated in her own words something that is in the textbooks. It's called confirming and disconfirming responses, which in a nutshell means that it's possible to answer a person's question without going into stuff you don't want to talk about, but at the same time affirming that person's right to ask the question and affirming their humanity, being kind to them, saying, I understand that you've got this question and it's troubling you, or you really need to know. And then to just say whatever they're comfortable with, like, I don't think you're ready to hear the answer to it right now, or whatever. But that's really different than saying you shouldn't ask. You don't have the right to ask. And you hear the difference there. It's a huge difference.
Thank you, Dr. Berger. And I hope that helps Maria a lot with that. Okay.
Thank you.
Let's talk more about that, Maria. Let's see, Dorothy, we've got to get you on, Dorothy. We don't want to miss you again, because you've got to tell our listeners out here how to support our program and our work.
Oh, well, yes. Go to the website of White Apple Institute, blastoff.com, and you can join there free, and you're paid for referring others to your own site, which you'll create when you join that one. And that's a way to support White Apple Institute when you shop from there.
That's if you already are doing online shopping already.
Yes.
You're doing online shopping, so why not go to our website? What is it again? White Apple?
White Apple Institute, blastoff.com.
And when you do that, and you're already an online shopper, because the stores are the same, it's a mall. It's the same mall that you go through with Sears and JCPenney and all of those other stores. Every store just about that's in the mall is online. And so when you go into those stores, they've been kind enough to share money with us, and also to give our members a discount. So please take advantage of that. Dorothy set that up very nicely for us. And if you need more information, call Dorothy at our number. Okay? What else can they do? There's a web. Oh, the membership on the website. Yeah.
Yes. You can donate or join at White Apple Institute as a member. Very easy. There's a PayPal account there. You'll see that little emblem. Or you can just send an email if you want to mail a donation in. That's fine, too, whiteappleinstitute.org.
Okay. We've got 1 minute remaining. Let's go ahead and mention those sponsors real quickly and certainly acknowledge Dr. Martha Berger, not only for her contribution to the show, but for her generous financial. Thank you, Bergen.
We appreciate you so much.
Well, I appreciate you guys very much and all the wonderful work that you do. You make such a difference.
Thank you.
And here's on the
by the way, we had a donation come in from a mother who just sent a check and said, thank you for supporting my son. We didn't know who it was at first, but it was really nice to have that. We missed Tom Baker, our office manager. He's doing very well lately. Eric Johnson have agreed to put in telephone fax lines for us. So just new things that have been coming up lately from our sponsors. Thank you, Dorothy.
You're welcome.
Great program.
All of you. Great program because of all of you. Love and peace to you. See you next Saturday on To Students and Teachers. Okay? Thank you.
had opportunity. You've had an opportunity to speak to Tony, who's blind. Yeah. You have, I'm sure. Well, there's so many people.
Yeah. Put me in there.
Where?
The dog.
Somewhere?
Yeah.
Somebody's been in the office?
Yeah.
Doing what?
Changing. Moving some of my stuff.
Who would have done that?
Maybe just got in into something to look.
Oh, they were probably looking for my dad.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I asked, that's the only person I know that.
Oh,
is, Miranda, look at my headset. Okay, and she didn't put things back?
No,
she's been rushing.
Not her.
She was rushing. Oh, it's not her.
It's not her.
Well, we don't want anybody touching what you're doing, okay?
Yeah, I know.
All right? Everything should go back just the way you have it, okay? I should be the only one to change it, and when I change it, I'm even going to talk. I'm not going to just change it and leave it. Like, you know, I mean, I'm putting you in charge of that place in there, and I want you to make it look right, and I can't wait to go in there myself and see what it looks like, which will be in a minute. But we have a conference call coming up. Okay. And I need you to call Tony while I call Dorothy, okay, to make sure that we, that everybody has got an apple, because after this, we are cutting people off the board. Okay. Oh, that's right. You didn't get this. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to have you move the printer in here. We're going to move the printer in here. We need to find something like a table that rolls. You know what I mean? And anyway, I just need you to ask Tony and Melissa, did they get a chance to